ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति This is the last chapter in this part A that we are studying now. And in this, the topic is role of religion. The word religion is a Latin term. It's two words from Latin put together called religion. That is re ligare, which means to unite back to the origin. So, religion is meant to unite the individual to the indivisible reality. That is the idea. We are now thinking ourselves to be separate from each other. We are all different individuals. But actually we are indivisible reality. We are all that one indivisible reality appearing to be different individuals. And the moment our focus is on that differences, there will be disharmony and there will be desires and lack of peace, agitation. The moment we realize that we are indivisible reality, there will be peace within and harmony without. That's the idea. But unfortunately, this is not how religions are practiced in the world today. Each one understands religion. In the Sanskrit, there is a word called mata. Mata means opinion. Now, there are certain people gave out certain truths which is applicable for certain people for a certain period of time. Not necessary that everything what they said has to be applicable to everyone at all times. That which is applicable to everyone at all times is called Sanatana Dharma. Okay, so in every religion, if you see, there are truths which are applicable for all periods of time for everyone. That we can take. Certain things would have been important during 500 years ago, 1000 years ago. It need not necessarily be applied today. So therefore, we have to understand the core and then move on in life. Otherwise, we will be fighting with each other without really understanding our religion. Every religion has rituals and philosophy. The philosophy is to uplift you to a greater heights. Human being has the potential to grow to the level of the Atma. So religion is science that should help us to unite back to the origin. But unfortunately, everybody is stuck at the material level. Even religion is used for enhancing one's material wealth or physical health or to give mental solace or give intellectual curiosity. So what to do? Okay, Thursdays we'll have Bhagavad Gita class. Fridays, bhajan. Saturday, go to some temple. Something like that. It's like, just filling our time. It should not be that way. That's all he's saying. So in this culmination of human life, ultimately, to dissolve in the Atma. So here, he's saying a lot of people are lost in the world. And in this context, he's giving this poem called Pineapple and the Bee. It's a very nice poem, simple poem, but it talks about how we get attracted and we destroy ourselves. Let's read that paragraph. William Cowper.
William Cowper portrays the mad pursuits of the human race in his magnificent poem, The Pineapple and the Bee. The poem draws the parallel of human desires with those of a bee. A bee tries in vain to go through the glass frame to consume the pineapples arrayed therein in triple row. After wasting half the day, it takes its flight another way.
See, before we proceed, religion is not meant to fulfill your desires per se. Religion may prescribe certain rituals to fulfill your desires, but the primary goal of religion is to make you rise above your desires. Please understand that. It may prescribe certain rituals and all that, helping you to fulfill your desires. But that's not the primary goal of religion. Because there is no way one can fulfill all desires. The more you fulfill, the more you want. Mind can never be satiated. You can never fight with non-existent mind. Fighting with mind and ego is like fighting with darkness. You will only lose the battle. You can never win against darkness. If you want to really win against darkness, win over darkness, you have to bring in light. You go and box with darkness, you will only become tired. The problem is this mind and ego, when analyzed, actually doesn't exist. When you really analyze, the so-called mind and ego doesn't exist. You understand that it's a superimposition. And therefore, one needs to gain this knowledge that these are all superimpositions. I need to remove the superimpositions and experience the truth within the underlying factor. That's what religion is meant to. As long as you think you are this ego, there will be insecurity, and to fulfill those insecurities, desires will come. And you go on fulfilling more and more desires, the more cravings will come. You will get caught in this. This is what is happening to all of us. So therefore, he says in this poem, the parallel that is drawn is between the bee. The poem draws the parallel of human desires with those of a bee. You know, it is never satisfied. Never ever satisfied.
The poet compares the futile attempts of the bee to a man who desires the companionship of a woman passing by in a chariot. He complains of the chariot glass that separates them. In another comparison, the poet describes a maid's desire for the jewelry behind a show glass. Both man and woman consume half their lifetime pursuing endless desires for peace and pleasure. They crave for possession and enjoyment of worldly things and beings at the physical, mental and intellectual levels. That is subtly indicated by the triple row of pineapples. Some linger with vain hopes without doing anything about it, while others break barriers and meet with serious consequences. None realizes that the solution lies in looking within. The poet concludes brilliantly that the wise who have imbibed the truths of life can find bliss in the worst of environment and circumstance.
So the poem talks about a pineapple vendor selling pineapple, nicely cutting them and arranging them in triple rows and covering it up with glass lid. And a bee sees this, gets attracted and tries to enter. B is not able to figure out why it's not able to enter, because actually there is a glass case. Since it's transparent, the bee thinks there is no barrier in between, but there's a glass case. And the bee is not able to enter. Half a day the bee is trying, fails, and then after wasting half a day, the bee turns the other way. And then he gives these three examples. I'm sorry, the example of a passerby seeing the princess of the country and getting interested in her. And in between there is this curtain coming in the way, getting agitated. And then there is this maid who is interested in the jewelry when she goes to the shopping mall, but she doesn't have money. So what the poet wants to say is, the law of life is that you get what you deserve, not what you desire. Instead of wasting your time pursuing your desires, fix a goal beyond your selfish, self-centered interests. Work for that. Work for that truth. And when you do that, the objects of your desires will be at your beck and call. Or by attaining the objects of your desire, what you are going to achieve happens. That will be at your beck and call. In fact, objects themselves will be at your beck and call. And if not the objects, definitely happiness will be the beck and call. It will be the outcome of your action. This is what the poet is trying to say. There is law of karma. The cruel glass in between is this. What is that glass? See, when you go to a supermarket, whatever they sell is meant for everybody, as long as you pay for it. Isn't it? They don't care. They won't say, oh, your bank balance is only 1 lakh. You can't buy this. Their bank balance is 5 crores. They can buy. They are not going to say that. If it is 100 rupees, 200 rupees, you pay that, you can buy. Doesn't matter who you are. Whatever is the price for it, you have to pay. Similarly, for everything, there is a price in this world. But unfortunately, we desire, we work, and we get it. But there's a price you got to pay for the happiness. What is the price you have to pay for the happiness? What is the price?
Keep your selfish ego to a side and work for the betterment, for the truth. And what you deserve will come.
You're not wrong. But
not right either.
I won't say not right. I'm looking for that word. See, as long as the I exists, now, there won't be happiness. You find out. You said the same thing you said, but in a different way. Work for a higher goal and all that. The higher goal, what is the thing? I is not there. Where there is I, happiness gone. Nobody cares for me. Everything I have to do. And sometimes you do everything. But nobody recognizes. It's okay if nobody does anything. That's also okay. But nobody recognizes. I. To the extent I comes, to the extent happiness goes out. In any relationship also same thing. There is more rights than duties in relationships. When there is we, there is duty. When there is I, there is rights. The more the rights, the more the riots will be. Now, you see, the focus should be on duties, not on rights. We are not saying that you do not have a right. I'm not saying from that angle. Every time, my right. You find out anywhere, wherever I and me and mine comes, happiness goes for a toss. When you are in any joy, at that moment, as long as you are in the joy, I was not there. You find out. You work for an object, you get that object, you contact that. In that, temporarily, the eye is gone. Quickly, the eye comes back. That's why you say, "Arey yaar, kya ho gaya? I have to get it back again. Get it back again." So actually speaking, happiness is in losing the ego or realizing that actually there is no ego. Realizing that ego is a false existent thing. And mind is an offshoot of it. And that's why there is no way of fulfilling your mind. Impossible. So, when your mind craves, you work for it and you fulfill, temporarily the mind dissolves for a while. Temporarily. And you are in ecstasy. Again the mind comes, again run. So you think that it is in the achievement of the object. No, it is in the losing of the ego. So, instead of, there's another example Swamiji has given in the very beginning of the book, Vedanta Treatise. I don't know in the new edition if it is there or not. What he says is, there are people trying to catch hold of the head of the shadow. And the more you try, the more you will fail. Your own shadow's head you try to catch. You won't be successful. You can't succeed. Instead he says, touch your head, you would have touched the shadow's head. So the thing is, we are running after the joys that are shadow. The real joy is within. That's what the poet wants to say. So, the pineapples that are kept in triple rows are at different levels of the personality, body, mind, intellect. All the time, from the time we wake up in the morning till the time we go to sleep, all we are doing is working to fulfill these desires. Physical desires, emotional desires, intellectual desires, going on and on and on. That's it, nothing else. And half our life is wasted, he says. Half our life is wasted means 50 ke baad Vedanta Treatise class you will come. Class chal rahe kya kahi? Because itna beatings one has got in life, so at least 50% of people come after 50. Before 50, busy, you know, making my millions and you have goals of buying homes in this, on top of this mountain, that thing, this thing. Then suddenly after 50, 60, slowly, slowly you will say, "Hey Baba, what is that book some day before you were talking about?" Everybody comes. That's what he means by half of the life is wasted. Meaning, most of our time is wasted in just chasing the shadows. Instead, stop, think, and proceed towards the real happiness. That's all he's saying. Beautifully he concludes the last few lines. Let's read the poem and then we'll get on to that. Please read.
The Pineapple and the Bee. The pineapples in triple row were basking hot and all in glow. A bee of most discerning taste perceived the fragrance as he passed. On eager wing the spoiler came and searched for crannies in the frame, urged his attempt on every side, to every pane his trunk applied. But still in vain the frame was tight and only previous to the light. Only pervious to the light. Thus having wasted half the day, he trimmed his flight another way. Methinks, I said, in thee I find the sin and madness of mankind. To joys forbidden man aspires, consumes his soul with vain desires. Folly the spring of his pursuit, and disappointment all the fruit. While Cynthia ogles as she passes, the nymph between two chariot glasses. She is the pineapple and he the silly unsuccessful bee. The maid who views with pensive air the show glass fraught with glittering ware, sees watches, bracelets, rings and lockets, but sighs as thought of empty pockets. Like thine, her appetite is keen, but ah, the cruel glass between. Our dear delights are often such, exposed to view but not to touch. The sight our foolish heart inflames, we long for pineapples in frames. With hopeless wish one longs and looks and lingers, one breaks the glass and cuts his fingers. But they whom truth and wisdom lead can gather honey from a weed.
So, it's a beautiful, beautiful poetry, especially the last few lines, which is given in italics. See if you can memorize. Our dear delights are often such, exposed to view, but not to touch. The sight of our foolish heart inflames, we long for pineapples and plums. With hopeless wish, one looks and lingers, one breaks the glass and cuts his fingers. But they whom truth and wisdom lead can gather honey from a weed. So all he's saying is, we are born in this world, we see the objects and beings, mind desires them, and we crave for it. Tamasically, we may sit and sigh, I like it, but I cannot get it. Or rajasically, you may try to follow certain shortcuts and then hurt yourself. Rather than that, there is a sattvic way. What is that? Follow the higher goals of life. Serve. Serve your family. Serve your nation. Serve your organization. Rise above the ego. When you rise above the ego, whether or not you achieve the desires as a byproduct of your action, you will always be happy because there is sacrifice of ego. Joy is in the sacrifice of ego. Joy is not in the achievement. That is the point. So in any relationship also, today what is happening is, there is more competition, there is more dominance, there is upmanship and one-upmanship and all that. That's why you don't enjoy the relationship. Remember always this relationship, you will enjoy when you learn to lose. You will learn to lose, then you enjoy. The more you try to win, you'll be a loser. All the fellows who are trying to win in relationships, they're all losers. I've given this example before. When you play with your grandson, you know, you purposely lose. And he jumps with joy, seeing that you get more joy. You can easily win that too, but you say, okay. After all, whom are you losing to? Your wife, your husband, your children, your family, your parents, your in-laws. I'm not trying to say that be a doormat. That's a completely different thing. But internally, you know, even in friendships, so what if you lose? There's joy. Once you experience that, then you do not want to win. You have to experience this. You win an argument and lose friendships a lot of times. One gentleman I met in Chennai, he told me he had recently gone to US before elections. He said, so many friends have now become enemies because supposing, he said, they'll ask you, you go for dinner, they'll ask you, what, are you supporting Democrats or Republican, especially Trump, you know. And he says, it's better I don't say anything because what I found there is, people are so divided. If you say this or that, they say, that's it. They stop relating with you. they become so, it's become such a tricky thing. You know, people, very close friends have become enemies, he says. What I saw there, he says. So, unnecessarily we get involved. Then we lose our friendships, everything. Ego, my opinion, my view. Maybe you're right, maybe you're not. Okay, you put forth your point, move on. But no, I comes, everything goes. Please remember that. So in the pineapple and the bee, what is happening? The bee is seeing the pineapples beautifully cut and arranged, gets excited, wants to go and enjoy, came out. So that's why he says, folly, the spring of their pursuit, disappointment, their fruit. Spring of the pursuit is folly. The very pursuit today is fulfill my desires. You know, I've got a lot of intelligence now, going to best of schools. I'm going to use all my intelligence to fulfill my desires. I'm going to use my intelligence for the betterment of the world. From whatever comes out of that, I'll fulfill my desires. That should be the right way to go. Nobody is saying don't fulfill your desires. But let that not be the very spring of your pursuit. Human existence is not just meant for fulfilling your desires. That should not be the primary goal of life. From the time we are born, we've been constantly taking. We are obligated to pay back. Thiruvalluvar says, we have taken loan from our children. Very, very interesting. Thiruvalluvar in Tamil. He says, you have taken loan from your children. What is this? You are indebted to your children, he says. Now you wonder, what is this here? We always say, children are indebted to parents. He says, ulta. Always Mahatma say ulta. Or rather, we say ulta. They say the right thing. They are indebted to our children. Why? Because you have inherited this world before them. So you have an obligation to give them the world at least as you received it. If not better. If not better, at least as you received it. What have we done? Air is polluted. Everything, all the five elements have been destroyed. Water. In Delhi elections, that was a big campaign. Water. Yamuna. That these people will do, they will do. I don't know all that. I'm not getting into all that. But water is gone. Water gone. Air gone. Air to toast. Nobody can talk about it. Because everywhere there is fertilizers. Everywhere plastic and this and that. Earth is gone. Water is gone. Air is gone. Having destroyed, heat also increases. Space gone. Everything gone. Why? Everybody is chasing their desires. You have made a mess of what you received before your children. You are indebted to your children. Because you have inherited this world long time before they have come into this world. How many of us think like that? Our thinking is all ulta. So, he gives the example of a man who sees the princess being carried in the palanquin. And then, you know, when the screen is little bit moving, in the gap he sees her. And then he likes her. He wants her. Where is this fellow? Where is she? How he can, you know. So joy is forbidden, man aspires. Forbidden in the sense, you don't deserve it. And then maid goes to the mall and then she sees many things and then sighs of empty pocket. You have to work for it. Work doesn't mean just working and earning the wealth. See, always remember this. The lower will get attracted to the higher. Children, everyone gets attracted to children. Because children do not have ego. They are pure expression of innocence. So, somebody buys a chocolate and gives the child. Somebody has something in the hand, they give one to the child. Lelo. What is that the child, what is that in the child making you to give something of yours? But innocence. So when you rise, when you want nothing, everything comes to you. When you want everything, everything runs away from you. This is the law of life. A simple law of life. It's truth. When you work for the higher, dropping all the lower interests, things get attracted to you. They will come. And your joy will not come because they have come to you. Maybe sometimes it doesn't come to you, but still you will be in joy. Why? Because you have lost the I. That's what he says. But they whom truth and wisdom lead can gather honey from a weed. In a very simple place, they may be happy. Not maybe, they will be happy. In a simple situation, they will be happy. There are people who keep saying, you know, we were very, very happy those days, even though we were all living in a small house. Now we are living in palace, but we have lost the happiness. It's got nothing to do with palace or the small place. You go back to the small place, you'll be miserable today. You understand? Because you got used to air conditioners, you got used to many things. You'll be miserable. So it's not the small place. It is not moving to a bigger palace. In the bigger palace, you have a bigger heart. In the small house, you had a bigger heart. With the same bigger heart, if you were in palace, you'll be happy. It's not that Vedanta is saying everybody has to go and then live in 6x6 room, then you'll be happy. It's another madness. A lot of people think simple one achieve. And this pressure is there on all the people who are talking on Bhagavad Gita. You should not wear chappal. Your dhoti also should be torn. You should not give new. What a new dhoti this fellow is wearing? Must be some crook Swamiji. No. Right? This has got nothing to do with where you live, what you do. It is how big your heart is. When you are exposed to the higher knowledge, the heat that comes out of the knowledge will expand your personality, expand your heart. And then your hands will stretch out to serve. When your head is exposed to knowledge, your heart will expand, your hands will extend in service. And when you have these three H in your life, wherever you are, you'll be happy. That is what he's saying. But they whom truth and wisdom lead can gather honey from a weed. From a weed means useless thing also you draw honey. So the problem is our folly, the spring of their pursuit. When he says our understanding is all folly. We think it is in the big palace. We think it is in the quantity. It's not in the quantity. It is in the mind's quality. So that's all he's saying. That they whom truth and wisdom lead can gather honey from a weed. Yes. Very happy. So many people. So this has to be clearly understood. When you rise above, your ego things will get attracted. Because you're in the higher position, everything will come to you, flock to you. Continue, please.
A human being is composed of spirit and matter. His material components are his body, mind, and intellect. His spiritual core is the Supreme Self, Atma. The Self remains ever the same, eternal, changeless. Whereas the material equipments are in a flux of change. The body changes, so do its perceptions. The mind changes along with its emotions. The intellect and its thoughts change too. These equipments make perennial demands from the world, which itself is constantly changing. Since both sides are in motion, their contact must necessarily cause friction, frustration. How then can there be any stability, harmony in their interaction, any peace and happiness in the world?
The simple question is asking is, when you analyze, a human being is made up of spirit and matter. The material component, which is called the body, mind, intellect, is constantly changing. Whereas the self, the spiritual core, is unchanging. It is changeless, eternal. And the world is also constantly changing. The mind is changing, world is changing. So therefore, he says there is friction. And in that friction, how can there be happiness? The material equipments are in the flux of change, the body changes. So does the perceptions. The mind changes along with its emotions. The intellect and its thoughts change. These equipments make perennial demands of the world, which itself is changing constantly. How can there be happiness? Unless and until you identify with the changeless reality. That is what he is asking. Since both sides are in motion, their contact must necessarily cause friction, frustration. How then can there be any stability? So, we are all chasing the mind's desires rather than chasing the truth. So there is a story in Puranas that Narad Muni apparently brought one mango, only one mango, and he said this mango should not be shared. It has to be eaten by only one person, not shared by two or three people. And it was given to Lord Shiva and Parvati. And said, you can give it to one of your sons, Ganeshji or Subramanya, whomever you want, you give. But you have to give to only one person. And they said, Are, you brought one and you are saying you give to one, how can we do that? So they said, okay, let's have one contest. Whoever goes around the world and comes back quickly, they'll get it. So immediately Lord Subramanya got on top of his Vahan, vehicle, which is peacock, went on a world tour. Ganeshji's Vahan vehicle is rat. How can he go on the rat and go around the world? So he asked, is going around the parents, Mata Pita, is equal to going around the world? The learned people said, yes, correct. Going around Mata Pita is going around the world, same only. So he simply went around Mata Pita and got the fruit. By the time Lord Subramanya came back, Lord Ganesha already got the fruit. He said, how is this possible? Then he was told all the things that happened. And he got angry. The story goes like that. The point we need to learn is, what we are looking for in the outside world is within us. The direction has to change. That's all. You don't have to change anything. Continue doing the same thing, what you are doing. But change the direction. Don't do this as a means for happiness. Do this as a service. Whatever you do. And whatever comes out of it, accept as prasad. Then you see how your life, wherever you are, you will be happy and things come so many prosperous, many things may come in your life. As a result, many things may add up. Still, your happiness will continue. You will not feel insecure that one day it will be gone. What will happen to me? No such insecurity, nothing. Because your happiness is not coming from your diamonds. It is coming from within you. Earlier you might have not had diamonds. Now you may have diamonds. But still, happiness is same. Because it's not coming from diamonds. This is what he's trying to say. There is no way, if you follow the mind and try to fulfill, you can be happy. But all it is only temporary. Without fulfilling, you'll be agitated. After fulfilling also you'll be agitated because you may lose it. Now what to do? So you are in terrible condition because you're chasing the mind. This is what he's saying. Folly is the spring of their pursuit. Our pursuit is all to just fulfill our desires. Instead of trying to fulfill our desires, we should try to deserve by rising to the higher levels. And that is only possible by gaining this knowledge. That's why we study all this. Continue.
Thus, it is your body, mind and intellect that do not meet their demands and suffer. That is no reason for you to suffer. Yet you do because your identification with these equipments. Identification with an object or being is a result of constant thought and feeling flowing towards it. As you think, so you become is a law of life. Thus, when you constantly think of... Thus, when you constantly think of, feel for the body you identify with, you become one with it. You believe you are the body. Thereafter, whatever happens to your body happens to you. So when your body is warm, you say, I am warm. And when your body is cold, you say, I am cold. Similarly, you identify with the mind and become one with it. And when your mind is happy, you say, I am happy. When it is unhappy, you say, I am unhappy. Again, identifying with the intellect, you say, I am brilliant. I am dull. When your intellect is brilliant or dull.
So, all he's trying to say is, you have the body, mind and intellect, the material components. Then you have the Atma, the spiritual component. Now, where is your identification? If your identification is with the body, mind, intellect, you become the body, mind and intellect. If it is upon the self, you become the self. And majority of us, we identify with the body, mind, intellect. Then whatever happens to the body, mind, intellect happens to you. As you think, so shall you become. This is what is happening to us, he says. So, with the knowledge, what you need to do is change your identification. Don't identify with the material components. Start identifying with the Atma, the self within. So, he says, you know, if your identification is with the body, then when the body becomes warm, you say, I am warm. While actually your body is what has become warm. But you will say, I am warm. Why? Because you have now become so close to your body. So close. You have to stand apart and watch. You have to stand apart and watch. And the more you stand apart and watch, you understand that you are separate from the body. You may go through whatever is happening to the body. It may be pleasurable things, it may be painful things. You'll experience all that, but you will never be affected by it. Affectation is because you are very closely attached. That's the problem. That close attachment caused by ignorance and unquestioned living is the reason for our suffering. That's all he says. So when the mind is disturbed, you say, I am disturbed. You understand? So that's why he says, when your mind is happy, you say, I am. The mind is unhappy, you say, I am. But actually, you are the one who have identified with the mind. Same thing with intelligence, intellect. If it's dull, you say, I am dull. If it's brilliant, you say, I am brilliant. You are neither brilliant nor dull. You are neither happy nor unhappy. You are neither enjoying pleasure nor enjoying pain. You are beyond all this. You have attributed it upon yourself by constant thinking. This has to be understood. I have created my own shackles. Nobody else. What is the end of this? The day you understand this, instantly you become free. Instantly. Moksha is instant. You could have been tied for janmas. But the moment you gain that knowledge, if it clicks, from that moment you will be different. If it's not clicked, then you'll be writing thesis on it and get excellent marks and accolades, awards and all that. But in life, it will be useless for you. The day you understood, you won't be bothered about writing thesis. You'll be jumping with joy. Because it's the trick, you know, there, it's there. It's my identification. It's got nothing to do with what is happening to my body, mind, intellect. It's my identification. Therefore, it's happening to you. And nobody has made you suffer. You, through your ignorance, identified and you are suffering. Now, by gaining knowledge, shift the identification. That's all. Continue.
The body is bound to be affected by the heat or cold of the world outside. So is the mind affected by joy or sorrow, the intellect by honor or dishonor. But yourself within is immaculate. It remains ever unaffected by the attraction or repulsion of the changing world. If the world is compared to a magnet, the material equipments would be metal pieces and the self a wooden piece. The magnet attracts metal pieces. Metal sticks to the magnet, but the magnet does not attract the wooden piece. Wood does not stick to the magnet. If, however, the metal and wooden pieces are bound together, the magnets attract the combination. The combination sticks to it. Nevertheless, the wooden pieces in the combination is free. It appears to be influenced, affected by the magnet because of its identification bondage with the metal piece. Your real self is supreme, unaffected by the world. You are the self. The body, mind and intellect are mere vestures. You do not realize that and you become bound to them. Due to your attachment to these material components, you suffer the persecutions of the external world.
So this example you remember, very simple example. Wooden piece, iron piece and magnet. You take a wooden piece to the magnet, will it attract? No. Iron piece, of course it will. You tie them, will the combination get attracted? Yes. Even though the combination is attracted to the magnet, is the wooden piece attracted, though appears to be attracted? Strictly speaking, no. It only appears to be attracted. He says, similarly, you are the combination, the Atma and the body-mind-intellect. Body-mind-intellect is equated to what? In this example, what is the magnet referring to? What is the body-mind-intellect referring to? What is the wooden piece referring to? In this example. You can switch on your mic and answer.
The magnet is the world and all its, the world and the wooden piece is your inherent self and the metal piece is your body, mind, intellect.
Yeah. So don't go about saying Atma is like wood. Atma is compared in this example to wood. Atma is represented by the wooden piece, world by the magnet, and your body, mind, intellect by the iron piece. We are the combination. In the combination, the world can only affect the body, mind, intellect. But because we have tied mentally ourselves to this body, mind, intellect, we think we are going through this suffering. We are going through this happiness. You are neither going through happiness nor going through suffering. That's the truth. This is the madness. That's all he says. Your real self is supreme, unaffected by the world. Whatever is happening, you are not affected by it. But since your identification is there, you think you are affected by it. Continue, please.
The way to get out of your self-inflicted ordeal in life is to shift your focus of attention from the material layers of the personality to the inner core, self, Atman. You have hypnotized yourself to become the body, mind and intellect. Now reverse the process. De-hypnotize yourself by asserting your real self. Understand you are the self. Reflect upon it. Try to remember it in all your transactions of life. Assert yourself while you perceive or act with your body, while you feel with your mind, think with your intellect. Never lose sight of the self. Thus, gradually, you will gain identification with your real self. Become the self. Regain your infinite being. Reach the abode of absolute peace and bliss.
So ultimately, when he concludes, he says, you have to shift your attention from the material layers to the Atma within. The whole idea of meeting every Thursday, the whole idea of sitting and studying every day is to shift our focus. And the whole idea of trying to say that keep satsang all the time is to maintain that focus. Because our focus today is completely upon the material components. Material components, it's fully there. Once in a while, rarely shifts this side, again turns back and goes that side. So therefore, he says, we should do everything to shift our attention from the body, mind, intellect to the Atma. And keep it there. For so many janmas, we have been keeping it on the body, mind, intellect. Very little time, we keep it on the self. And then again, we'll get back and keep it on the body, mind, intellect, and think that nothing is happening. So many years I'm studying. Kya ho raha hai? Right? You see the very interesting choice of words of Swamiji. Self-inflicted ordeal. It's an ordeal inflicted upon yourself by yourself. And you think, main itna acha kaam kar raha hu, phir bhi mujhe, I don't know why this is happening in my life. Mera life barbaad ho gaya. You have inflicted it upon yourself by identifying. Why you want to identify? Sudama never identified with his poverty. Sudama's wife did. Sudama never identified with his poverty. Nor did Sri Krishna identify with his richness. Richness and poverty are madness. They are all at the worldly level. You identify with it, you are gone. If you identify with your richness, say richness, when you say, it's a relative term. It's a relative term. Now, if you say he's a billionaire, okay, he's a billionaire. In Indian rupees or in dollars? So this guy is a billionaire in Indian rupees. That guy is a billionaire in dollars. Dollar is now 87. Maybe by the time I'm talking, it would have gone to 88, 89, 90, I don't know. Now, this fellow is billionaire in Indian rupees. That fellow is billionaire in dollars. Now, Is there any comparison? So the fellow who seems to be rich from one angle is actually poor. See, if you play this game, you will be finished. In fact, many of them play this game not as a game. Very seriously they play. That's why they suffer. So, the point he wants to say is, you cannot be free from poverty. You have to free yourself from both poverty and rich. Both are related. Art looks to you as rich is poverty from another angle. So the real richness is to become free from both. This is what you have to understand. You cannot be on one side and win the battle. You have to become free from both. You understand that both are two sides of the same coin. Then you will not be bothered about richness and poverty and all that. You continue doing work, whatever comes out of it, you lead a life, simple life for that goal, so there will be a lot more adding in your life. That's called surplus. But surplus is not because you want to add. You are not hoarding. So this is how you rise in life. This is how you go beyond rich and poor. Let's conclude the class. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyerva Udhyatmana Va Prakrite Svabhavat Karomi Adyat Sakalam Parasmai Narayanayeti Samarpayam.
Hari Om Guruji.
Yes.